This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. He joins us every Thursday in the 12 o'clock hour, and we thank him for saying. Rafi, welcome to the show.
Glad to be back, Neil.
Rafi, let's first talk about the awards ceremony. You do have a definitive date now in November. Had to cancel before because of the hurricane. What will that date be?
Okay, so the new date for the MCC annual awards luncheon will be on Thursday, November the 7th, from noon to 1:30 at the Sheraton on Canal Street. So the speaking lineup is going to be the same. Governor Jeff Landry talking about some of his public safety initiatives. The head of the FBI in Louisiana is going to be giving his state of the agency address. Joe LoPinto, the sheriff of Jefferson Parish, will be one of the keynote speakers, talking about what's been happening in Jefferson Parish over the past year. And DA Jason Williams will give his state of the agency address as well. And that will be, complementing the most important reason that we're assembling, and that is to recognize the fabulous work done by agencies all over the region for investigations and prosecutions that have made this community a safer place. So that's the real reason for this meeting, to celebrate the remarkable accomplishments of the men and women, in the trenches that do the work but rarely get recognized. And we will be able to tell God and country and everyone in the audience the fabulous work that they've done to make this community a safer place for everybody.
Absolutely, and we will be broadcasting live from that event on that day, and we look forward to that as well. All right, let's jump right into it. The city of New Orleans and DOJ, they file a joint motion to begin sustainment period. I was a little surprised by this, but I'm glad it happened. Let me just put that caveat out there because of some of the recent stuff that has been revealed again with the Public Integrity Bureau, but I'm glad this is moving forward. Your thoughts?
Right. Well, as you and most of the audience knows, that this is something that has been anticipated. I believe that this sustainment period we'd be well into the sustainment period and approaching the termination of the consent decree were it not for some of the city's misguided efforts in 2022 and 2023 to attempt to terminate the consent decree without achieving compliance. So by some misguided notion, the mayor was pushing the city attorney's office to terminate the consent decree just because it was too burdensome and too costly. As such, she elected to attempt to litigate her way from underneath this consent decree. Those attempts proved futile. And the department between 2013 and 2021 made remarkable efforts and was close to substantial compliance. But in 2022, the mayor decided that enough was enough, and she attempted to terminate the consent decree. And that started a two-year period in which the department actually backslid in compliance with areas that they had previously been in compliance with. So that delayed everything. And what ended up the game changer in all of this was the entry of the new superintendent, Ann Kirkpatrick. So based on the city's trajectory, the court had handled and addressed some of the deficiencies that existed. One of the major investigations and hearings in 2023 was the independent police monitor, the federal monitor's investigation of the investigation conducted into Officer Jeffrey Vappe. So PIB conducted an investigation, and then the federal monitor reviewed what PIB did and came to the conclusion that PIB, the Internal Affairs Division of the Police Department, did not conduct that investigation appropriately. He documented where the investigation was deficient, documented how the investigation was in non-compliance with the consent decree, presented his findings to the judge. The judge, in this case, decided to conduct a show cause hearing, forcing the city to come to court and explain their actions with respect to the way that they conducted the Vappe investigation. That hearing took several days, and the city presented evidence. And on the day that the judge was supposed to rule on the hearing, Ann Kirkpatrick was hired, came to court, and convinced the judge that the NOPD and the city of New Orleans would pursue a different path. Had the judge ruled, the judge basically concluded that the PIB investigation into Officer Vappe was not in compliance with the consent decree, and her finding of that would have given her the authority to sanction the city, which could have included financial sanctions, and was further evidence of non-compliance with the consent decree. Because of Ann Kirkpatrick, the judge in this case, Judge Morgan, decided to give the police department the opportunity to, you know, revise their approach to the consent decree. And were it not for Ann Kirkpatrick coming in and convincing the judge that the city of New Orleans and the police department would in fact pursue a different course, the city probably would have been held in contempt. That would have been litigated by the city, and we would not have seen what happened last Friday, which was the joint motion of the city and the Department of Justice. So since 2012, when the Department of Justice stepped in and said that either we enter a consent decree with the city of New Orleans or the Department of Justice will take steps to attempt to take over the police department, and the city elected to enter into a consent decree with the Department of Justice in January of 2023. If the department between 2013 and 2022 was making remarkable progress, and if it had not come off the rails, and it was really driven off the rails by the approach that the mayor insisted that the city attorney's office take, we probably would have been exiting the consent decree at this point in time, or approaching that. Now we're entering what could be the last phase of the consent decree, which is the sustainment period. So essentially, the city and the Department of Justice all agree that we're in compliance now, or substantial compliance. And if the judge agrees with that, then that will start the two-year wind-down period, in which there will be less oversight, less costs by the city. The police department will provide to the court continuing proof of substantial compliance during that two-year period, that wind-down period. And at the conclusion of 2 years, if the department convinces the judge that they remain in substantial compliance, the consent decree will be dismissed and it will end. So we would have been a lot closer to the end, if not already completed the consent decree, were it not for the failed efforts and attempts by the mayor to terminate the consent decree without achieving compliance. But I think what this signals is the department is back on track. The Department of Justice agrees with the police department that they are in substantial compliance. And what will happen next is the judge will schedule a hearing on this motion. She will allow for the public to present their opinions about either consenting or dissenting with the proposed sustainment period. And then the judge will rule on that. Now, all of the signals from all of the hearings since Ann Kirkpatrick got here was that, you know, the police department was doing good work and checking off all of the boxes in the consent decree that had backslid between 2022 and 2023. So I think that we are on path right now to enter the last phase, and it is because of Ann Kirkpatrick being here and allowing, you know, the police department that had done all of the heavy lifting before she got here to finish up what they started and place the department in substantial compliance and ultimately end the consent decree. But that wasn't going to happen until Ann Kirkpatrick got here, and now we're back on trajectory to end this consent decree by entering the second and final phase of the decree.
The sustainment period is not just a perfunctory thing either, right? I mean, there's audits to make sure that they are in compliance with all of the items that were listed inside of the consent decree.
Right. So the entire consent decree, to get to this position, the police department collected all of the data about their compliance with the consent decree. So the department over the past 11 years has developed a process and protocols for measuring every component of the consent decree. They collect all the data and give it to the federal monitor. And the federal monitor analyzes that data. But the police department, since they collect it and they know how it is a part of the consent decree, essentially the police department is in charge of their compliance with the consent decree. They just need the federal monitor to agree with their assessment of it. So the benefits of what we're seeing right now is now the police department has the internal capability to measure their performance to maintain constitutional policing standards, even after the consent decree is gone. So just as during the first phase of this, all of the data had to be collected and amassed by the police department and presented to the federal monitor, during the wind-down phase, there will be annual and quarterly audits conducted by the police department at all of the substantive areas of the consent decree that will be presented by the police department to the federal monitors and to the judge for her to ultimately decide if the department has remained in substantial compliance during the two-year wind-down period. But all of this is based on metrics and data that has been internally collected and amassed by the New Orleans Police Department.
And congratulations to the NOPD, right? I mean, these things are not easy to come out from under. I mean, we have examples. You and I have talked about it. Can't remember the cities offhand, but been under a consent decree for, I think, 12, decades. 14 years. I mean, it's like, you know, crazy, and it's hard to get out from under these consent decrees.
Right. So, you know, and keep in mind that, you know, in 20 and 21, there was also COVID, and that slowed down some things. It made it more difficult as well. So I think were it not for COVID and were it not for the mayor's attempts to try and prematurely terminate the consent decree, I think we'd probably, you know, have had this behind us. But, you know, at least now we're back on track. It shows how close we actually were and how important Ann Kirkpatrick's emergence as a stabilizing factor in the police department probably prevented would have been a lengthy period of litigation between the city over the sanctions that the judge was probably going to be imposing. And, you know, the culprit, the person that would pay the price would be the police department and the public, you know, in the cost in the form of increased costs for the consent decree being maintained for who knows how long.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we got to get to a break. We are visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. When we come back, we'll talk about the indictment of Randy Farrell and the implications for Mayor LaToya Cantrell. Stay with us. We'll be.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right back. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. He joins us every Thursday in the 12 o'clock hour. Rafi, recently released by the federal government, the indictment of Randy Farrell. He was the individual inside safety and permits. This has all kinds of machinations to it and downstream implications, and none of which are very rosy, right?
Right, right. So what I think a lot of people don't understand is why is a private business person conducting inspections for the city of New Orleans? So any type of construction in parishes usually require permits, and there are certain requirements that the people conducting work, electrical work, or licensed contractors have to adhere to certain standards, and they have to submit their licensing to the parish or the city, and that has to be approved. The problem is that the city and parish agencies that have to conduct these inspections and issue these permits don't have sufficient staffing. And if a project is delayed because the parish or the city doesn't have the sufficient staff to go out and timely make inspections, it's driving up the cost of construction and the work, delaying projects. So parishes and cities agreed to allow third-party contractors to come in and conduct inspections for the city and the parish. Farrell created this company doing this service, not just in New Orleans, but in Jefferson, in Kenner, and in other places that are permitted by law to do it. And he would do third-party inspections. So in the city of New Orleans, Farrell was in business, and his company was IECI, which is a third-party inspections agent. He was licensed by the city of New Orleans to conduct inspections. He's supposed to follow the city policies and laws with respect to licensing and inspections and the issuing of permits and confirming that the work was performed by licensed contractors in conformity with codal provisions. Well, what the government is alleging is that they issued a 25-count indictment. 21 of the counts involve fraud that Farrell did as a third-party contractor, where he would certify that the work being done on homes and businesses by electricians was A, the work was done by a licensed electrician, and B, the work was done in conformity with safety permitting standards. What the government is alleging that Farrell allowed unlicensed electrical contractors to perform this work. And since if he had issued a permit to an unlicensed contractor or approve work done by an unlicensed contractor, that would be a violation of city law. He falsified the documents that were submitted to the city. He would claim that the work was done by a licensed electrician, when in fact, in reality, it was done by an unlicensed electrician. And the unlicensed electricians would bribe him to allow them to get the job, do the work, and receive the permits that they weren't entitled to receive. And he did this hundreds of times between what the government is alleging between 2007 and 2024. The amazing thing, I checked yesterday, and Farrell's business is still operating in the city of New Orleans, despite the fact that he's under indictment right now. But that's a matter, you know.
He's still doing inspections for the city?
Still, on paper, doing inspections for the city. So I guess this indictment came out last week, and he was innocent until proven guilty. Now, we'll see what the city's response is to this indictment. But he's still out there. His business is still operating in the city of New Orleans. So essentially, what the government is alleging in the first 21 counts is that every time he submitted a fraudulent permit or inspection certificate to an unlicensed electrician, that was a count of wire fraud. And the government has documented several cases in the indictment, one of which was a homeowner, apparently with some knowledge of electrical work, noticed while the walls were still open that the electrical work was done in an unsafe manner and not in conformity with the code, and he had paid his contractor for a licensed electrician. The homeowner found out that the work was performed by an unlicensed electrician. He brought that to the attention of Randy Farrell that was conducting the inspection. Randy Farrell, the government is able to show that Randy Farrell was paid a bribe by that electrician and or contractor in this. And Farrell, despite the fact that he was put on notice that the work was done by an unlicensed electrician, submitted documentation to the city of New Orleans that the work was done by a licensed electrician, used a licensed electrician's name and company when the work wasn't performed by that licensed electrician or his company. It was done by an unlicensed electrician. And the homeowner had to pay another electrician to come in and correct the issues. So every one of the 22 counts are similar to that, where the government is able to prove and alleging that they have the ability to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Farrell falsified records, accepted bribes from the unlicensed electricians and contractors to falsely certify that the work was performed by licensed electricians and in conformity with city code provisions. And he used that for his own personal enrichment. Now, it's also been disclosed that Farrell bribed Public Official 1 and Public Official 2. And Farrell wanted City Employee Number 1 fired. City Employee Number 1 was a safety and permits employee that also was in charge of the one-stop website for the city of New Orleans. So electricians and contractors can go online at the one-stop website for the city and certify the work was done. And the person in charge of that began to question some of the electricians and some of the contractors, and she noticed that all of those questionable electrician and contractors, their work was being inspected and approved by Farrell. She was on to what Farrell was doing. And Farrell allegedly, according to the government, bribed Public Official 1 and Public Official 2 to fire the head of One Stop and the deputy director of inspections, which is the same person, Jennifer Cecil. So Jennifer Cecil, city employee, had her job terminated because the government is alleging that Farrell wanted her fired, wanted her gone because she was jeopardizing his revenue stream. And what was the scope of his revenue stream? Well, we know that before last Friday's indictment, Farrell in 2021 pled guilty to federal tax charges. And his tax fraud involved his business, IECI, that he owned in a partnership with his brother and his sister. And he pled guilty to defrauding the government in back taxes to the tune of over $1 million and is paying restitution. So that, I believe, is indicative of how much money he was generating from IECI, conducting inspections. And when a city employee threatened his revenue stream by exposing the fact that he was fraudulently submitting documents of licensed electricians certifying that they had done the work on homes and businesses that they did not do. In fact, the work was done by unlicensed electricians. The government was able to document that, and the government tipped their hand in the indictment and indicated that some of the evidence that they have of these bribes and payments came from Farrell's cell phone, text messages that were sent to him by contractors and electricians that were acknowledged by him. So again, we saw when Officer Vappi was indicted, the government made clear that they had Officer Vappi's cell phone records and they had Public Official 1 cell phone records. Public Official 1 in the Vappi case was Mayor Cantrell. Public Official 1 in the Farrell case is public is the Mayor Cantrell. So a lot of what the government is proving, both in the Vappi prosecution and now in the Farrell prosecution, involves cell phone records that were obtained by the government. If they're going to prove the various elements of the offense, and it's not going to necessarily just be hearsay testimonial evidence of one witness versus another. It will be the actual cell phone records of the defendant, of the co-conspirators, of the people that are involved in this. It'll be their text messages, their photographs, their emails that will be presented to a jury to prove the various elements of the 25-count indictment that's been brought against Mr. Farrell. So there's going to be a lot more to play out. This isn't the end of it by any stretch of the imagination. This is just the beginning of the next phase. So normally what you see is the government work their way up a ladder. You know, the first run in ascending the ladder was the Officer Vappi indictment. And we saw maybe the common denominator between the Vappi and the Farrell indictment are the cell phone records of both the mayor and the accused in this. In the Vappi case, they had Vappi cell phone records. In Farrell's case, they have Farrell cell phone records. They make it clear in the Vappi case that they have the mayor's cell phone records and all of that. So we're seeing the second run of the latter being the Randy Farrell indictment, 25 counts, and each count has a potential exposure of up to 20 years. So this is a serious indictment in him. And keep in mind that, you know, this is now his second offense. He was lucky. He got probation. He was had the ability to make restitution to the government in the amount of $1.1 million for back taxes. So this is an offense that he's not going to get probation on. He knows that.
Raffi, what happens relative to? So we've identified these inspections that were, for lack of a better term, fraudulent, right?
Yep.
And we know of one case where something was done improperly. What are we doing to protect the people that, you know, that are the cases that we know about, where we had fraudulent inspections, we had electrical work performed by an individual who was not licensed to do so, you know, and what do we do to protect those people? I mean, we have potential fire hazards. We don't know what the risks are, but now we're in some respects burdened with all this knowledge, meaning the city of New Orleans. Shouldn't there be a remediation plan put in place? I mean, we've created dangerous situation.
In the indictment, the government points out the measure that, you know, the point you just made. You had homeowners and business owners and property owners that relied upon the inspections. They paid to have licensed electricians do the work, and they found out that unlicensed electricians were doing the work, in some instances substandard. You know, in the one instance that I cited to, and there's a number in the indictment that I didn't go into, the homeowner actually observed the substandard violations of the electrical work. He was able to remediate that, but he reported it, and that's included in the indictment. But the government alleges that not only were the property owners victims of this, but the financial institutions that may have loaned money are now exposed to this. The insurance companies that, you know, have issued policies based on the fact that, you know, this is licensed and the work done was in compliance with, you know, current codal provisions and safety provisions that wasn't, they're at risk in all of this. The lenders, you know, the banks, the financial institutions, when they guarantee these loans and loan the money, they have every expectation that this work was being done in conformity with current code and safety measures, and now they're finding out that it's not. And as the government is alleging in this indictment, there were hundreds, and they didn't get into exact numbers, hundreds of false documents and permits that were issued and supervised by Farrell, who's been doing business since 2007, and he's still doing business right now. So I don't know how you open up the walls, but, you know, and look at everything. Even if you can identify every business, the only way to determine what's at stake is, or what's at risk, is actually open up the walls and see all the electrical work that was done. The cost for that, who's going to assume the cost of doing that? And we may have hundreds of ticking time bombs out there. And it's going to be a nightmare for everybody that hired his firm to conduct inspections. They may not even know, you know, who the firm was that did the inspections. It was the contractor that made that decision to hire Farrell's firm in some of these cases. And the homeowner and the property owner may not even know. They think since the permits were issued by the city of New Orleans, they were done by the city of New Orleans in compliance. So, you know, you're hitting on, you know, a very cogent point.
Yeah.
In that, well, I mean, you know, the cost of this is just staggering.
Yeah, it's concerning. It really is. I mean, you're burdened with this knowledge now. It seems to me someone's got an obligation to go do something. I don't know who that individual is. Hadn't thought it through, but I would be nervous if I was sitting as the head of the city, right? Because they accept.
I don't know if Farrell's firm has any insurance, you know, and that property owners that used his firm may be able to make claims against his insurance carrier. You know, he had the ability to pay back over $1 million in restitution for federal taxes. It shows you he's made a lot of money. I don't know if he has any other assets that could be, you know, the government in this indictment is also asking for, you know, forfeiture of his assets derived from this criminal enterprise. So all of that remains to be seen, but, this is more than just, you know, paying bribes. You know, there are hundreds of victims of this case, And every one of these wirings and constructions and false permits are a ticking time bomb to the property owners that may be faced with some catastrophic consequences as a result of this corruption.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. Got to get to a break. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. When we return, we'll talk about the U.S. Marshals Service in the Eastern District of Louisiana, the New Orleans Task Force, their stats. I talked about their national stats of a recent operation that they announced. Very, very impressive. We'll be right back. Stay with us. On a text line, somebody working for the city of New Orleans falsified records and accepted bribes. No, man, that can't happen. Say it ain't so, senor. That's kind of the response of folks going on. But let's pivot to the U.S. Marshals Service. I talked yesterday about their national operation, Rafi. Those men and women over there, they do incredible work. I mean, the numbers were, just off the rails. Of the folks that they took off the street with their most recent operation. And the same holds true for their task force here that was operated from October of 2023 through September 30th of 2024. Tell us about it.
Well, so, we're looking at 531 fugitives that the U.S. Marshals Service, just in that calendar year period between October 1 of 23 and September 30 of 2024, were responsible for taking off the street. So those 531 people that there are warrants for, law enforcement usually considers a case cleared when they issue a warrant. They may be looking for somebody, but until they're arrested, that means that those people are still out on the streets, ostensibly still being a problem in the community, contributing to the crime rate. So in this area, in this district, and let's face it, most of those 531 were wanted out of New Orleans for crimes perpetrated in the city of New Orleans. They took 531 people off the streets, and these aren't low-level offenders. We're looking at 107 arrested for murder, 41 for rape, 9 for kidnapping, 41 for robbery, 100 for assault and battery, 32 for sex offender, and 20 drug cases, offenders. And these aren't going to be users. These are going to be the distributors, the people involved in the distribution. So a week ago, we talked about the 17-year-old that escaped from juvenile court. 2 days after we talked about that, the U.S. Marshals Service arrested that individual in Baton Rouge. So they were able to track him down in Baton Rouge. And when they arrested him, he was with another person that was wanted for the Shamrock murder. So you got a two for one.
Yeah.
They found the 17-year-old that escaped from juvenile court that had was about to have his case transferred to adult court for attempted murder and armed robbery. They found him hiding out in Baton Rouge was someone that was wanted for a murder in the city of New Orleans in the Shamrock murder case. So that is not the exception, that's the rule. If you see on the news that an offender has been picked up outside of the city of New Orleans, wanted for a crime in the city of New Orleans, you can bet that that's the U.S. Marshals Service that found them and are bringing them back. And the unlocatable other wanted subjects that are still hiding out in the city and around the area, the police department and all of the different law enforcement agencies in this area rely on the Marshals Service, and they never tell them no.
No.
And the Marshals Service is like the Canadian Mounted Police. They always get their man.
No doubt.
Do outstanding work, and no one knows who they are or what they do, but where would we be without them? They are just one of the best untold secrets in the city.
I've often said that they could find the tick on the ass of a donkey in the middle of the Mojave Desert. Because I was sheriff, I relied on them exclusively. They do just absolutely incredible work. And one thing that we did not say about this operation, 24 missing endangered children were recovered.
Yep.
That is absolutely incredible. Thank you again for joining us, Rafael Goyeneche. You got to get to a break. Have a great weekend, my friend. We will be right back. Is in for Scoot today. What do we have coming up, Ian?
Let's see. We are going to talk to Christian Stokes, who's the PR director for the Mortuary Haunted House. The theme this year is Hellection 2024, in case you weren't frightened enough. We're going to talk to David Schultz from Hamline University about what's in Special Counsel Jack Smith's filing and Donald Trump's election interference case. And I wanted to ask, too, what are some unusual phobias that you've heard of? I got a list of things that you didn't think would scare you, but now they will. So that and much more coming up.
Ian's headed your way with a great lineup. Stay tuned, folks. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll see you again tomorrow on No Filter Friday.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.